Hello, I wanted to take a moment to thank you for listening, and also to explain why you might hear ads like this before, during, or even after an episode. We're a small but mighty team here at Realm, and to help fund our shows, we promote products or services that we think you'd enjoy from a variety of sponsors. If any of our ads interest you, one of the best ways to support us is by visiting the link or using the promo code in the ad. It's pretty much a win-win since you can get some great deals and we can keep making awesome shows like this one. You can also visit realm.fm/partners for more information about our sponsors and how to access the different promotions. Thanks again for joining us in our corner of the universe. Listen away.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Hey there, it's Neil Heligers, host of Adrenaline Realm's thriller channel. This is False Idols, episode 16. Enjoy.
Layla arrived at the Zamalek rooftop a few minutes before 8 p.m., feeling wide awake and ready for adventure, in her gray t-shirt, khaki pants, and boots. At a few minutes past, Alberto pulled up in a battered black Jeep.
"You're here," he said, with some surprise. "I wasn't sure if you were really serious about this."
"Now you know," she told him. He pushed open the passenger side door and she climbed in. He drove west, skillfully navigating the narrow, winding streets.
"The site's about an hour away. There is a satellite photo in the glove compartment."
Layla dug out the photo, turning on the overhead light to examine it. She saw a heavily magnified image taken by a thermal camera, looking down on a mostly dark, cold area. Alberto pointed to several blooms of warm red and yellow, clustered in one spot.
"You got this from your friend who works with UNESCO, yes. Teresa is a professor of Egyptology at the Università di Bologna, but she prefers the term a space archaeologist."
He laughed.
"She gets satellite images from the military and uses them to look for sites where ancient ruins might be buried. Something about the terrain and erosion. I don't really understand it. But the thermal imagery also shows the heat signatures of people."
He pointed to the red blobs on the image.
"In this case, at least three."
Layla studied the image.
"How do we know they're working on an illegal dig? Couldn't they just be a group of Bedouins around a campfire?" "Could be. This trip might turn out to be nothing more than a pleasant midnight drive through the desert." "But you don't think so?"
He shook his head.
"If they were in the middle of nowhere, maybe. But this group is suspiciously close to an authorized excavation by a French team near Saqqara. Illegal digs have a tendency to pop up around legitimate sites. Where there's one ancient ruin, there must be more, right? I assume your friend also shares these images with the local police?"
Alberto snorted a laugh.
"She does. But they don't have the manpower to chase down every report of an illegal dig. And half of the cops are probably getting paid off by the same people who hired the diggers."
"And work for the Mujarib," she concluded.
"Right."
They drove past the Dahshur pyramids and turned onto a small road, then onto an even smaller unpaved trail. There were no visible lights and no signs of human habitation, just miles of rocks and blowing sand in every direction. Alberto kept track of their position on a GPS app as they approached the coordinates of the dig. He stopped the car near an outcropping of dark volcanic rock when they were still a quarter mile away.
"I don't want to get too close with the jeep," he explained. We should walk from here.
Glad I ditched my heels then, joked Layla. But the journalist wasn't laughing.
I shouldn't have brought you into this.
I'm kidding. I won't slow you down, I promise.
That's not it.
He faced her, his eyes dark and serious.
The men who work at these sites are dangerous, and they do not like to be spied on. If they see us, they'll start shooting.
He grabbed his backpack from the back seat and pulled out a Beretta M9. It was an accurate weapon, but Layla had always found the grip a little too bulky.
Are you sure you want to come with me?
He asked. She wished she could reassure him that she was a trained federal agent, not a pampered heiress he had to protect. But she had to stay in character.
I've spent my whole life being sheltered from reality, from the consequences of my actions. I don't want to live like that anymore. I want to see the truth.
After a long moment, he nodded.
Just stay close and follow my lead, he instructed.
He put the gun into the front pocket of his tan jacket and slung the pack over his shoulder. They walked into the desert, climbing up and over the shifting dunes. Layla felt her heart pounding in anticipation. This was the kind of mission she had trained for at Quantico, not sitting behind a desk translating reports about other agents' adventures in the field. Other than the quiet sound of their feet digging into the sand, it was utterly quiet. Alberto shone his flashlight just ahead of them, with his hand over it to dim the beam. When they spotted the lights of the dig, he turned it off. As the two of them approached, they could hear the sharp impact of metal hitting stone. Alberto waved for Layla to stay put as he crested a dune and peered cautiously over the top. He pulled a pair of binoculars from his pack and looked through them, pushing his tortoiseshell glasses back on his forehead. His jaw tightened at what he saw. Layla crept up beside him. They were still several hundred feet away from the dig, and she couldn't see much in the bright glare from the flood lamp surrounding the site, powered by a humming generator. Alberto finally handed her the binoculars. She saw four bearded men wearing long, loose caftans working at the site, digging up and disassembling the ruins of a small building. Two of the walls were still standing, one about 10 feet long, the other at least 20. They were made of what looked like limestone brick and plastered smooth on the inside, painted with ancient symbols and hieroglyphs, just visible beneath a thick layer of dust. The other two walls had collapsed long ago. One of the men shone a flashlight through the narrow gaps in the pile of rubble, as if looking for something buried inside. Another man was in the process of tearing down one of the remaining walls. He stood inside the structure, using a sledgehammer to smash the ancient limestone into pieces. Layla winced as he hit the wall, casually destroying a piece of her heritage that had survived for thousands of years. This is barbaric, she whispered to Alberto. He nodded grimly.
It's happening all over the Middle East. Hell, all over the world. I can't even think about how much history we're losing every day.
A third member of the work crew was sorting through the broken chunks of limestone, looking for decorative pieces to sell. Like the engraved marble on display in Tanaka's bathroom, thought Layla, feeling sick. When he found something suitable, he handed it up to the man standing by the edge of the pit, who appeared to be supervising the dig. The man turned the chunk of stone over in his hands, examining it, pleased. He looked a little older and considerably cleaner than the others. His nose had obviously been broken at least once, and not set properly, so that it bent slightly to the left. Layla noted the holstered gun on his belt.
That's Khalid Yassin, Alberto said quietly. He runs several of these crews. Runs them for who? The Mukharib?
He nodded.
And they've been keeping him awfully busy lately, digging up more relics to sell. They're raising money for something special.
Layla thought about the huge cache of weapons that Monahan had found in the shipping container.
That can't be good. No, it can't.
Then the man with the flashlight called out in Arabic, "I see it!" This prompted Yasin to shout to someone outside the bright floodlit circle. A dark-haired little boy, no more than 7 years old, stepped forward in response. He was painfully thin, in baggy clothes so filthy it was impossible to tell their original color. The sight of him made Layla go cold. He looked just like the kids she'd grown up with, the Zabalin of Manshet Nasser. Under all that dirt, he could have been Rami.
Hello, friend. This is Neil Heligers, host of Adrenaline Realms Thriller Channel, and I'm here to talk to you a little bit more about the Greenlight app. And this message is, of course, sponsored by Greenlight, but our family was using the Greenlight app even before the first ad in a wonderful, thrilling cosmic coincidence, right? See what I did there? So again, to catch you up, Greenlight is a debit card and a money app that's made for families. Basically, the way it works is that parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on their kids' spending and saving. And you can see exactly how much money they have in their account, and there's different ways to give them money. What we've been doing is like a weekly allowance, a certain amount that goes into his account every week. So in order to further the conversation about money and about earning, we're using Greenlight as a kind of a foundation for that conversation. In other words, instead of just the allowance he gets for certain base things that he's expected to do around the house, we are also adding the chore feature, which is certain one-time payments for certain one-time jobs. For example, in our house, we're trying to encourage our son to start walking the dog more. He's old enough for it, he's responsible enough for it, and he's done it enough that he knows what to do. So he can really see that for all those extra times that he steps up and does the dog walk, he gets rewarded for that job well done. And this is the conversation. In life, when you work a little extra harder, you get a little extra compensation, and you can either save that up or spend it how you like. And we're not alone in this. Millions of parents and kids are learning about money on Greenlight. It's a very easy and very convenient way for parents to raise financially smart kids and for families to navigate life together. So sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/adrenaline. That's greenlight.com/adrenaline to try Greenlight for free. greenlight.com/adrenaline... So thrilling, right?
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
He scrambled down a ladder into the pit and joined the man with the flashlight, who gave him instructions Layla couldn't hear, pointing to one of the gaps in the rubble barely a foot wide. The boy began to wriggle through, his skinny frame just small enough to fit between the broken chunks of limestone. The unstable pile shifted, and Layla gasped, afraid it would collapse on the boy. It didn't. For now. The kid kept inching forward, his feet disappearing into the small mountain of rubble as the man shone the light in through another gap. Finally, a barely audible voice shouted,
"I have it!"
"Bring it out,"
the man told him. But apparently the boy was taking too long to crawl backward through the tight space, so the guy reached in, grabbed his ankle, and dragged him. This movement disturbed the delicate structure of the rock pile. It shifted again, collapsing some of the gaps and creating others. The boy's head emerged seconds before it would have been crushed.
"Jesus,"
murmured Alberto. Layla exhaled the breath she didn't realize she'd been holding.
"He was lucky. 26 kids just like him died in illegal digs last year alone. They're dispensable to these assholes," he said,
his voice growing nearly too loud. She shushed him and he quieted down, speaking just as intensely.
"They go to the poorest neighborhoods to recruit these skinny, starving little boys, and sometimes girls. The kids know perfectly well how dangerous it is. They know they're risking their lives for a few piastres, but they need the money. Not for a new toys or designer clothes, but to keep their families from starving."
"I know that,"
she snapped. "Better than you think," she wanted to add. She could hardly blame Alberto for being condescending to the person he thought she was. She doubted that Jehan or Hiro or even James had ever considered the question of what they would do to survive, or to help their families survive. Layla knew what she would have done when she was a child, if someone had offered her the equivalent of a pantry full of food in exchange for the chance of being buried alive. She would have taken it, as would Rami or Sanaa. It was pure luck that no one had ever asked. Alberto quietly took a camera out of his backpack. He lay flat against the dune and stretched out his arms, pushing the lens as far as he could toward the dig. He took a dozen pictures, then crawled forward a few inches, moving even closer than he had with the binoculars. Layla touched his shoulder and whispered,
"Be careful."
"I will," he assured her. But, emboldened by his success, he edged just a little closer, angling the camera to see around the side of the generator. The bright floodlights glinted off the lens, catching Yassin's attention. He turned toward Layla and Alberto as they quickly ducked out of sight. They weren't quick enough.
"Honak!"
he called to the other men. "Over there." Alberto pulled the Beretta from his pocket, but as soon as he looked over the top of the dune, Yassin drew his own gun and fired. The journalist dropped back.
"Caso!"
he yelled.
"Siamo inculcati!"
"Fuck. We're fucked." Layla knew she had to act fast before the men climbed out of the excavation pit and surrounded her and Alberto. Of course, doing anything other than screaming uselessly might blow her cover as a sheltered heiress, but that seemed preferable to being captured or killed by terrorists. She grabbed Alberto's gun, expertly twisting it out of his grip.
"What are you doing?"
he demanded.
"Get back to the jeep. I'll be right behind you."
She felt completely calm, detached from her own fear. Agent Eldib could handle this.
"What? I can't!"
There was no time to argue. Layla quickly edged along the side of the dune, moving a few feet to the left. Yassin's attention should still be focused on where he'd seen Alberto. She popped up, quickly took aim at Yassin, and fired, catching him by surprise. As she ducked back down, she heard a shout of pain. Layla grinned to herself. She'd hit him. She had no idea how badly, but she wasn't going to stick around to find out. The other men in the pit would have taken cover from the unseen shooter, which offered her a few seconds' head start. She turned to Alberto, who was staring at her in utter shock.
"Come on!"
She grabbed his hand and they ran, away from the bright floodlights and into the dark, open desert. As their eyes adjusted to the dim moonlight, they were able to retrace the footsteps they'd left on the way in. They heard the voices of the men coming behind them, followed by the sharp crack of gunshots. Alberto ducked instinctively, but the men were too far away to hit moving targets in the dark. The surge of adrenaline made Layla feel invincible as she sprinted for the Jeep. Alberto had the keys in his hand as he got in and started the car. Layla quickly jumped into the passenger seat, and he sped off. She looked out the back window as they careened down the unpaved road, nearly swerving out of control on the turns.
"It's okay," she said finally. "There is no one behind us."
He let up frantically on the gas, shaking his head as he sputtered,
"What was that? How did you—"
She was tempted to tell him the truth, but despite the intense experience they had just shared, she hardly knew the man. And he was, after all, a reporter.
"My father taught me how to shoot," she said simply. "At terrorists?" he demanded. "At the empty bottles, actually."
She shrugged. Alberto glanced at her, his expression unreadable. She resisted the urge to embellish the lie with too much detail. He said nothing and looked back at the road. They drove for most of the next hour in silence.
"You can drop me back at the Zemelec rooftop," she said. "No, I'll take you home. It's late."
Just a few minutes after 11, actually. The party was just getting started in clubs all over Cairo. But with everything that had happened in the past few hours, thought Layla, it felt a whole lot later than that. As they pulled up in front of her building, she faced Alberto.
"Thank you for bringing me along. I needed to see that."
"I should be thanking you for saving my culo."
She laughed, and the tension between them eased. She offered her hand to shake, but Alberto took it and briefly touched it to his lips.
"You're not at all what I expected, Miss Noir."
He looked at her like a puzzle he was determined to solve, one that she hoped he would leave in the box.
"I'll take that as a compliment."
She got out of the car.
"I'll see you at the Minister of Culture's reception next week."
"I'll be the one in the rented tux," he told her, and drove off in his very sandy Jeep.
Layla walked into her penthouse suite, finally able to drop all pretense. The adrenaline that had been keeping her numb to the reality of what had just happened drained away, and she thought about the little boy at the dig. Her eyes stung with tears. She forced them back. In her family, to her father in particular, crying had been a sign of weakness, and it was hard to let go of that judgment even now. She wished James could be with her. Not that she could tell him where she'd been or what she'd seen, but she always felt better just having him close. Of course, caring too much about someone was a weakness too. She knew that he was off somewhere schmoozing a potential client, but she'd see him tomorrow night at the Rothkopf Foundation fundraiser.
False Idols is written by Lisa Klink, Patrick Lawyer, and Diana Wren. Performed by Lauren Ezzo. Produced by Amanda Rose Smith. FBI advisor Robert K. Whitman. Theme music by Amanda Rose Smith. You're listening to Adrenaline False Idols, created and produced by Realm, your portal to another world. Listen away.
Every 5 minutes, a transplant candidate dies while waiting for a compatible heart, liver, or kidney. Imagine a technology that could provide those life-saving transplant organs for a high price, and imagine what a company would do to monopolize that technology. On a remote island in Lake Superior, a team of geneticists unlocks this holy grail of medicine by reverse engineering the genomes of all mammals, creating an animal with organs perfectly suitable for human transplantation. They envisioned a docile herd animal, but one team member had another, darker vision. This ancestor is anything but docile. The team's work spawns something big, something evil, something very, very hungry. Ancestor is a complete serialized fiction podcast by number one New York Times bestselling novelist Scott Sigler, with all episodes available. Binge the entire story now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Adrenaline is produced by Nicole Kreuter and Kaylin West. Associate produced by Devin Shepard. Executive produced by Molly Barton and Julian Yap. Hosted by Neil Helligers. Audio editing by Corey Barton. Original theme by Marcus Bagala. Original cover art by Kendall Thomas.
Find more shows like this on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.